Welcome, welcome everybody. Welcome to Pharmacy Pathways. Today we have Dr. Charles Livingston. He is my friend and former colleague, and we are going to be peeling back the curtain of pharmacy today, taking a dive into the world of corrections. Mm-hmm. And by corrections, yes, we mean prison. So without further ado, I introduce to you Dr. Charles Livingston, Jr.
Ooh! Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yes, we are glad to have you, because mm-hmm. this is a very unique area of pharmacy. I didn't know about it until it was time to enter into that world myself at the time. So mm-hmm. we definitely want to have you here and tell us what that is like for you.
Okay.
And I'm also, you know, going to be chiming in, but we want to start off with a little bit about who you are, where you're from. Let's learn about Charles.
All right. Where do we start? So I'm originally from Prince George's County in Maryland. I went to college at Hampton University. I did my undergrad prerequisites in pharmacy school straight through at Hampton. When I left there, I went and I was a retail pharmacist at a big chain pharmacy for a couple years, the whole time ready to not be there. I'm sure every retail pharmacist can pretty much say the same. And then I moved from there to a specialty HIV clinic where I was both the clinical pharmacist and the dispensing pharmacist. So I, in addition to filling the prescriptions and sending them out or giving them to patients and talking to them about their medications, I was also talking to the doctor, making recommendations for different medications that may work for that patient, and just kind of being a more integral part of the team rather than having the specific task of mm-hmm. handing out their medicine.
Right. So that's where your clinical reach started growing. And mm-hmm. okay. What inspired you to get into pharmacy in the first place?
Okay. So when I was in high school, my grandmother, she was also a pharmacist. My grandmother got an award for being the longest continuously licensed and practicing pharmacist in the country.
Whoa.
And at the time, I was looking at doing something health related. I wasn't exactly sure where I wanted to go after high school. And then I kind of just talked to her about it and decided that I wanted to take that route as well. And then I pulled the trigger and did it.
And when you said you went through undergrad and prerequisites, did you do because we have two different options, right? We can mm-hmm. just get our prerequisites and go right in, mm-hmm. or we can stay, get our degree and then apply. Which one did you do?
I did the former. So I went to Hampton. I did 2 years of prerequisites as an undergraduate mm-hmm. and then transitioned right into pharmacy school from there. Not having earned a degree yet, but then at the end of the PharmD program, I earned the title of yeah. Doctor of Pharmacy, and so there was no bachelor's there.
Okay, nice. That's what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. But my science teacher pulled me to the side and without me asking, and it literally made me change my mind. After that conversation, he told me to think about if I don't like pharmacy and I choose to not get my undergraduate degree, what will that leave me with? Mm-hmm. And that put the fear in me. And I actually ended up staying 2 additional years mm-hmm. and then having a gap year on top of that, trying to make it to pharmacy school. So,
I actually kind of recommend the way you did it for the very reason that you said. So I knew several people who started with me through the pharmacy program, made it even into pharmacy school, and then decided they didn't want to do any of that anymore. And then they were stuck back with, now I'm a sophomore again. Mm-hmm. Instead of being able to have that background of, oh, if I don't really want to do this anymore, at least I have the bachelor's and I can do something else with that. Mm-hmm. I always recommend when I'm ever speaking to students or interns or anything that they try to go that route unless they just know that they are really gung-ho about pharmacy and know that they won't change their mind about it.
Right. Yeah. And at the time, I wasn't sure. But luckily, it worked out for you. I haven't heard of anyone that actually got it and then backtracked. So that you do know people like that, though.
Yes, I do.
That's wild. Okay, so then you're working and you're getting your HIV clinical experience. What led you to apply to the current role that you have now?
So at the time of me applying, I had been taking care of a sick relative, and so I had stepped away from work. And then that position was no longer available when I came back. And so I started feeling around just to see where my clinical skills would make sense. Mm-hmm. And then I came across the position as the hepatitis and HIV pharmacist in corrections. And I said, oh, this sounds right up my alley. And I applied and I got it.
Well, you heard it here, folks. When I applied, and this is embarrassing, I did not know I was applying to a corrections job. Like, I found out, like, in the interview, they asked me, like, do you know the environment that we work in? And I was like, I was wondering why they were asking me that question. And it made sense once they told me the environment that it was. But I did not know at the time when I was applying.
Oof, you brave.
I think I wasn't even used to seeing the word corrections mm-hmm. and making the connection. Yeah. Because I was so far removed from that. So I probably just overlooked it and didn't even put two and two together.
I knew exactly what I was applying to when I pressed submit on my application. So I can't even imagine that being the surprise that you get, not at your home when you're at your computer applying to stuff, but when you're in the interview looking people in the eye.
Yeah, that was the phone interview where they told me that. And so I had to think about that's a whole other conversation. Yeah.
Interview preparation stuff.
Yeah. I had to think about can I do this? And then I would ask certain questions about my proximity to the inmates and what that would look like. Fortunately, my office was outside of the campus. Mm-hmm. So I really think that is what led to me saying yes and taking the experience on. But you're in the hub. Yep. So let's talk about your title. So you're the regional clinical pharmacist.
I'm the regional clinical pharmacist, and I'm the statewide viral hepatitis and HIV clinical pharmacist.
Fancy.
Two hats.
No, you have like 10. You have 10 hats.
You're right.
But those are the major titles. So let's get into the different hats. So what does, I know every day is not the same by the, you know, the environment of the job, but I guess tell them a little bit what a week may look like or kind of what rotates in a month.
Okay. So in corrections, you don't think about it when you're not in the environment, but they have sort of an inpatient-ish and outpatient setting. So mm-hmm. you have the incarcerated persons who are in the regular housing unit or in segregated housing unit. Yeah. And then you have what's called an infirmary, which is kind of like a mini hospital wing. Mm-hmm. And so on a given week, several times a week, I will round on those patients, look through their charts, make any recommendations for any medications or adjustments that may be. On top of that, because I have the responsibility of covering more than one facility, I'm also fielding consult requests from the providers at my various facilities, reviewing those patient charts, giving them back recommendations for whatever it is that they may be asking for help on. It tends to usually be diabetes, but I've had other consult requests as well.
Yeah.
And then because I'm also the hepatitis and HIV pharmacist, I am fielding those patients. So each week we have our various teams across the state submit patient names with their corresponding labs and information to request for review mm-hmm. to be treated. And then I sit on a panel with myself, the infectious disease doctor, and the provider at the individual facility. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of go over the each individual case, make a recommendation for what to treat with, what labs to do, what type of follow-up to do. And then on top of that, I have a similar sort of setup of a panel for pain management. And so the various facilities that I'm responsible for, same sort of setup as the hepatitis HIV panel, where patients are submitted for review and then reviewed. But this time, instead of with the infectious disease provider, I'm with, there's a medical director for each kind of region in the state. And so we sit with that medical director, the physician that's on site at the facility. We discuss the case, and then we bring the patient into the room, and we discuss the what we've determined can be the next steps for that patient, and then they can chime in or field in their thoughts about it, and mm-hmm. we can field questions that they may have. We may make adjustments based on additional information that we needed to get from the patient first. So it's a good collaborative effort, but yeah. we try to come to the patient first with a united sort of game plan.
Right, yeah.
So then when we inherently talk to the patient, if anything needs to change, we're all sort of on the same page already.
Right. And it's kind of like a hybrid of in-person and on the phone, right?
Yes.
So are you still calling in?
Yes.
Okay, to the panels, because the HIV hepatitis C you said is statewide.
Right.
So it's all
I'm
calling
all on the
in.
Phone.
For the pain panel, are you ever asked to step into the room during the encounter?
I have been asked. I respectfully declined.
And there, he has his reasons.
And I think I can be more effective as the pharmacist at a distance mm-hmm. than necessarily one-on-one in your face, especially when it comes to pain management. We're already in a corrections environment. We're walking through the facility, and the people who are incarcerated there are walking on the same paths and sidewalks that you are. Mm-hmm. And I never want to set myself up for the perception that pharmacy and the pharmacist is saying no to pain management. And because that's a very contentious sort of setup, I prefer to be the virtual person. It's worked out pretty well. Sometimes I have patients who have really great questions. Mm-hmm. Others, they have a hard time sort of following their own story. Mm-hmm. And we engage sort of both of them, and some are easier to get along with our plan than others.
Yeah, and in pain management, you really, in the environment, mm-hmm. you are trying to have as much objective proof as possible. We want all the images. We want all of the diagnosis in the medical record, because you are relying on what they're telling you. And we have been told that they'll you know, describe certain pain, but then they're walking around and they're fine and they're painless. So you have to really use, it's an art of mm-hmm. Having discernment for the potential risk of abuse and diversion of medication, but also making sure that we are addressing pain.
Yep.
And we're not dismissing pain. So it can be an artful dance.
Yeah. Some of our patients are more honest than others. Mm-hmm. And so they'll share exactly what's going on with them. You follow up with questions for any details, and they're very forthcoming and thankful for the team coming together just to help them as an individual. And then we have others who don't want to hear anything. They just want what they want. Mm-hmm. And that can be for a variety of reasons. They just are frustrated and want pain management, and mm-hmm. they know what they've had before, and that helped them at that point, whether or not it was appropriate. Mm-hmm. And then you have those who, for any reason, may be attempting to divert medications. And so we have to your point, have discernment with listening through, but keeping in mind that we also have, in addition to safety and efficacy of the medications, we have to have safety of the facility and those around that person, because anything could happen, and we want to mitigate us being the reason for that.
Right. And a lot of them especially were seeing pain specialists before they were incarcerated, mm-hmm. and they're used to having the heavy hitter narcotics and the heavy hitter medications. And then when they come into the environment, unfortunately, we have to consider the environment. So it's a whole host of things. So you're doing HIV, hepatitis C panel, mm-hmm. pain panel. Mm-hmm. What about some of your other responsibilities? Your administrative?
Ooh, okay. So I also have another panel call for mental health. Okay. It's one specific facility that does the mental health panel. And we sit through that as well. And we kind of go over the routine patients who just need more hands and eyes on them, mm-hmm. To be sure that everything that they have going on with them, because they're very complicated, complex patients, that we're being sure that we're dotting our I's and crossing our T's on everything that they have, so that we don't inadvertently do something incorrect and maybe cause harm. But they're very complicated cases, so having more eyes on it provides that added safety.
Right. Okay. So that's how many times? Once a month, you said?
Nope. Once a week.
Once a week? Oh. Mm-hmm.
I have three of them.
You have three panels every week?
Every week.
Okay.
Every week.
In addition to the infirmary every week.
Yep.
And then you have the administrative. Are we at administrative functions yet?
Yes.
Okay.
So administratively, I also am the co-chair of our regional P&T meeting, and P&T stands for
pharmacy and therapeutics.
All right.
I hope.
So I'm the co-chair of our regional one, so I have to put together different topic discussions or presentations, mm-hmm. of any updates that may have happened in the previous month, pharmacy related, and provide mm-hmm. those to nursing staff, the each individual facility's leadership, in the medical side of things, at least, mm-hmm. And the medical providers. And so we pick a topic each month, and I do that routinely each month. Mm-hmm. On top of that.
Well, what are some of the things that you're reporting? So like there's a clinical topic, but then what are some of the statistics that you might be reporting?
So we have a few statistics that we're going over. So we're looking over our accuracy of filling prescriptions correctly. So the nursing staff that is on site at the facility, once the prescriptions are filled and sent to the facility, if they catch that a prescription may have been filled incorrectly, the state wants to have an accounting of how many times that happens, what's our percentage rate of being accurate, mm-hmm. To ensure that pharmacy is also not causing a safety issue.
Right.
And then we also have an early refill report, and what that is essentially counting is whether or not a patient has needed or requested medications earlier than they should have, mm-hmm. and so we need to investigate why there's an overlap. Mm-hmm. And where the medication may be in being taken and all of that.
Right.
And then the additional thing that we go over is any back orders. So anything that we have not had in stock and needed to order, mm-hmm. anything that may be on a national back order or shortage, mm-hmm. So that providers know that we may be trying to limit the number of unnecessary uses of those products,
yeah,
so that we can reserve them really for the people who only have that as an option.
Right.
And those who have other options, we try to pursue those instead, unless we have a solid reason that we can only use those products. Mm-hmm. Sometimes those products are just completely unavailable.
Right, yeah.
And then the providers need to know, what can I order instead? What would be comparable to that? And so that's where we step in as pharmacists, and they often ask us, okay, so this is not available, what can I get instead? Mm-hmm. And then we make those recommendations for them to order that product that is available for use for that patient.
And as you were talking about that, that made me think about something else that you do that I almost forgot, but we can't not talk about it. Non-forms.
You're right. It's my every day, all day. So, so just like in the community, the medication list of what is preferred without any extra steps of review, mm-hmm. Is called a formulary list. It's a formulary on your insurance. It's a formulary while you're in corrections as well.
Yep.
In corrections, the payer isn't an insurance company. It's the state.
The state, yeah.
So the state wants to, because they only have a set amount of funds, they want us to sort of make sure those monies go as far as possible,
mm-hmm.
And to be judicious about inexpensive options that may be equally effective, but if we have a less expensive option,
yes,
they would prefer us to do that if possible. Of course, all the patients can get any medication that they need,
right?
But that need may be for a type of medication, and then there's an expensive option and a less expensive option.
Right.
The state always wants us to go with the less expensive option. So that's the background, that's yeah, a formulary. So we have that also.
Everything on the formulary, they can just order and it doesn't have to come through you.
Correct. There's no extra review for anything that is on formulary. For the things that are not on the formulary, that is where it has to go through clinical pharmacist review.
Mm-hmm.
So any of those products, whenever the providers order them, they have to send a request to their corresponding pharmacist that's covering their facility and request for that medication to be approved for that particular patient. They always have to provide sort of a justification for, okay, if there was an option on the formulary, why isn't that an option for this patient?
Mm-hmm.
If they have any additional information about disease states or yeah, drug interactions,
allergies,
or, yeah, anything along those lines, that's where that comes in.
Mm-hmm.
They provide that information so we get context.
Yeah.
And then we review and make a decision whether or not that's approved to go through and get filled and processed for that patient. If it is not approved, we provide an alternative treatment plan. So instead of drug X, drug Y would be preferred for this patient and would,
mm-hmm,
be beneficial for this patient. And these are sort of how you use that drug.
Mm-hmm.
So those messages always get sent back to the prescriber, both the approvals and the we need you to alter the treatment plan.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we need additional labs. Sometimes we need additional information overall. To be sure that we are making a safe and effective decision for those individual patients.
Yeah, and there's pharmacists who do this full time. Like,
yep,
they are non-formulary pharmacists.
Mm-hmm.
Or prior, what are they called? Prior authorization pharmacists.
Yep.
But they're authorizing non-formulary medications.
Right. So okay, it's the equivalent of a prior auth pharmacist at an insurance, mm-hmm, company.
Okay, nice. Am I missing something else that you do? I'm trying to think of all the hats that... Oh, M&M meetings. What is an M&M?
Mortality and morbidity.
Yes.
So anytime we have an unfortunate death in the facility, it happens. At some point, everybody's going to go.
Yeah.
we have to investigate what happened. Right. So whether or not it was something that could have been prevented, was it something that they just sort of succumbed to their disease states, mm-hmm. even though we were doing as much supportive care and treatment and all of those things for that patient, so that we can identify any gaps that may need to be addressed mm-hmm. to prevent further incidences from happening. Sometimes we just have altercations in the facility and patients unfortunately pass. Sometimes we have patients who try to act upon themselves to cause harm to themselves.
Mm-hmm. And we're successful at it.
Yep. And so we have to investigate to see what happened. Each sort of hat in the medical field does an investigation. So pharmacy does an investigation, nursing does an investigation, medical does an investigation, and then we have separate mental health providers that also do an investigation. Mm-hmm. And so we review everything sort of together, and any of the fields can chime in on the outcomes of the review by any of the other fields. And it's all a recorded conversation that is kept as a matter of legal record for those patients.
Right, which we will not be disclosing for matter of legal records. But mm-hmm. you, as a pharmacist, so it's a discipline, and some regions they have it on a phone call. For mine, each discipline will be in the same room, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. But you have your discipline's report. What are you looking for as the pharmacist specifically? What do you bring to the table that other disciplines can't?
So I review the medication list. So I go through the medications, look for any drug interactions. I make sure that there's an indication for each of the medications. If there is a drug allergy issue, any side effects that may be mm-hmm. Intensified by using two medications or more together. Yeah. I review all of those sort of things. And then
if there was a drug that should have been on that wasn't.
Yeah, correct.
If there was a drug that
is on and shouldn't be, yeah. we see those as well. So my role in that meeting is to identify any medication specific issues. We're very objective about it. Mm-hmm. It's not how Always, I feel yeah. about it. It's very, I reviewed the drug interactions, what seems like an appropriate drug interaction that may have played a role in some sort of way. Mm-hmm. Were we treating this patient for the disease states that they had going on appropriately? Mm-hmm. And those are the extent of my review to be sure that there's not any issues with the medications in specific.
Right. And with the clinical expertise, you're also comparing that to the labs.
Right.
When you mentioned the appropriate dosing, mm-hmm. you can gauge that also by referring to the lab work as well.
Right. Especially with a lot of my reviews are always on diabetes patients. So I'm constantly reviewing an A1C, being sure that they have good functioning kidneys, mm-hmm. Reviewing any of their lab values around cholesterol, blood pressures, their random or fasting blood sugar checks, all of that information mm-hmm. Lets me know whether or not we're treating that patient and controlling their diabetes, or if we need to make an adjustment to their medication regimen.
Yeah, and most of the patients that, I can speak for myself, but I believe similar for you, most patients that we touch on are kind of more like one time or very infrequent, mm-hmm. whereas the infirmary patients is where you're kind of longitudinally following those patients. You're more familiar with their disease state, their regimens. You can go in and see what their new labs are. Mm-hmm. So it can be very challenging because you're getting consulted about for anything.
Any and everything under the sun.
As there's not multiple pharmacists covering your facility, you're designated to your facility, so you are in charge of those patients. Mm-hmm. And you can be brought in for anything. mm-hmm. Even very specialized conditions that you've never encountered before in pharmacy school.
Right. And every time they pop up, I always make sure that I try to do as much research as I can about it, so that I don't come to the conversation ignorant.
Yeah.
But some of those conversations, I feel really like a fish out of water, mm-hmm. because it's not a topic that I know well. And I just looked it up, like, right before I left my office to participate in the meeting.
Oh, yeah.
So it can be challenging in that way.
Challenging. But we also need to learn, like, when we're crossing into territory where it's just not okay. And yeah. we have to refer to a specialist. Yep. Like, this is way out of scope.
Yep.
I forget what condition it was for me. I believe it was like persistent seizures. It was definitely something that should have been given to neurology, and mm-hmm. I had to gracefully bow down and be like, this is I cannot go further on the recommendations for this. This is a specialist intervention.
Mm-hmm. I had a similar sort of consult, mm-hmm. where I was consulted for somebody who had very complex seizure disorders going on. I am not a neurology pharmacist. Yeah. And so that's not my specialty. I don't know the nuances like a specialist would. And so I politely and respectfully pushed back that patient needed to be seen by a neurologist, because I would not be helpful.
Right. You have to know your limitations, mm-hmm. know your strengths and know your weaknesses. Because you can't just be out here playing with people's lives.
Absolutely not. And I have no problem saying, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I can look it up.
That's what you're supposed to do, man. That's what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. And I never want anybody to think that I know everything, because that's unreasonable. And then I become the go-to person for everything, which isn't fun either. But you have to know that, like, okay, I don't know this topic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that. And people are okay with that. You just have to tell them,
yeah.
Hey, I'm not all that familiar with this. Let me go look it up and I can come back to you with an answer. Or I've now looked it up and I really still don't know. Mm-hmm. So I have to direct you to somebody else or something else. I have no problem doing that. And people are very receptive when you're open and honest about knowing something or not. You would rather give them correct information than wrong information.
Exactly. I want to pause on that for a little while, because a lot of people, and I've seen it,
mm-hmm.
I've seen it, students, I've seen it, pharmacists, I've seen it, physicians, I've seen it. They won't acknowledge that they don't know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And they will force a wrong answer out just to sound like they know it all. And what that does, it actually breaks the trust.
Mm-hmm.
Not between you and patients, but not just between you and patients, but also your colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so much better to just say, I don't know. I'll look that up and get back to you.
Mm-hmm. I've had lots of my providers just stop by my office to casually ask me a question. And I have no problem saying, I don't actually know.
Mm-hmm.
Do you need me to look it up and see if I can give you an answer? And when do you need it? And I look it up and give them the answer if they need it. Sometimes they're like, oh, no, never mind. I just was sort of just kind of here to make conversation sort of deal.
Yeah.
But if they're seriously looking for information and I don't know it, I have no problem saying, hey, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I never want to give anybody wrong information just because I feel too prideful to say I don't know something.
Your pride should never cost somebody their life.
Right.
Or your license.
Both.
Both are important.
Because they come together.
Yes. Oh, man. So what else do you have for us, Charles? So it's not just about having the clinical skill sets, right? You mm-hmm. also have to have certain personality traits, mm-hmm. I believe,
yep.
to do well in this role. A special mindset.
Mm-hmm.
As well.
Mm-hmm.
So let's unpack that, because corrections is tough. Like, it's not easy.
Yeah.
And there is risk that you expose yourself to every day.
Mm-hmm.
I used to throw up a prayer before I used to walk into the facility, like, I would say like the last 6 months and then the first 6 months. And then I was just, I felt like God was just going to cover me. So I just was locking
it. We're good. I've stacked up.
Yes, I stacked up my prayers. But it's tough. It's challenging. You get to do so many cool things, but you are at risk every day. So let's talk about what that's like, the mindset you need to have, the personality traits.
So what I have found helpful is being a person who can sort of go with the flow, but be rigid enough where you need to be. So I can sort of go with the game, with the flow of whatever the providers I may be working with, sort of how they practice. And I'm okay with however anybody wants to do that, because you're entitled to do that. But when I see something that needs to be addressed, that's when I become rigid about, I want to be sure that this patient does not experience a negative outcome because I just overlooked it. Or I was absentmindedly just do, click, 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 and let something go by that could cause harm to a patient. Attention to detail is very helpful. Also,
well, I caught two things in there. Choosing your battles.
Yep.
And attention to detail.
Yep.
Okay.
Gotta choose your battles.
Choose your battles.
Choose a battle that's worth it.
Yes.
If it's not worth it, then you are just going to be annoyed all the time because your provider is not going to trust you.
Yes.
Because they think you're going to every time say no, 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 no. And really in your head, you want to say no, 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 no. But what they're doing isn't wrong. It's just different than how you would have done it, which is fine. It's not wrong.
Sometimes.
That's why I pick my battles.
I'm so type A though. I had to fight that. That was a tussle with me, like letting some things go. But I realized that I was going to be hurting the relationships that I needed to survive in that environment. Mm-hmm. If I can't work well with my providers, with my nurses, then it's not looking good for me.
Mm-mm. And they will not actively sabotage you, but they won't be as welcoming of your opinions on anything, your consult recommendations, whether or not you had a requested consult recommendation. They don't want to hear anything that you have. And I just now remembered I have another task that I do once a month.
And what is that?
So I audit the medication rooms in each of my facilities.
How did that get by?
I don't know.
Because that's a task. That's not even a task.
Whoa.
That is another responsibility that has its own role as a pharmacist, which we would call a pharmacy auditor. Tell us about that.
So each of the facilities, because the dispensing pharmacy is a centralized pharmacy, it's one pharmacy that sort of fills and sends out to each of the facilities, the medications have to be kept somewhere, and nursing has to be able to administer those medications. So there's different medication rooms at each of the facilities as strategic places to accomplish that. So each month we have to go audit each of those medication rooms to be sure that they are storing medications correctly, that they are reviewing for any expired medications, that they are maintaining sort of clean and neat environments around the medication, they're doing their documentation appropriately, that they have the emergency supplies that they need, and overall just keep a well-run medication room. So we do that as a additional check beyond nursing and medical staff that may have their own audit of the medication room. It's as a double, triple, it's a safety to be sure that nobody is missing anything that may need to be addressed. People don't realize, at least I didn't realize, that prison and jail facilities are like college campuses with gates and fences. So they're wide open spaces. You are walking quite a bit.
Yes, you are.
To get from building to building, and rain, then even within that building.
Rain or snow.
Right. And you're limited with what you can bring with you into the facility because, understandably, safety.
No umbrellas.
Can't bring an umbrella. If you have a something with a hood on it, it has to zip up the front. You cannot be a pullover.
Mm-hmm. Even your bags have to be see-through because yep. they need to be able to see what you have in your bag.
Mm-hmm. And when you come in, you have to empty the contents of your bag into a bin and take your shoes off.
Take off your shoes.
Just like it was TSA. And all of your belongings that are going with you go through an x-ray machine. And mm-hmm. then you walk through a metal detector and then are patted down on the other side of the metal mm-hmm. detector and you can retrieve your stuff.
And you can't wear a wire bra, ladies.
Mm-mm. Can't wear a smartwatch, so no Apple Watches, no Fitbits. It has to be a watch that has its own battery inside and does not send a signal to anything.
And if you have a phone, you have to submit all the information for that phone and mm-hmm. get it authorized.
Mm-hmm. Specific. Your specific phone.
Yes. Your model, make.
All that.
All the numbers.
And if you switch your phone, like you get a replacement phone or you buy a new phone, you're supposed to provide the updated information.
Right.
So that they have that when you're coming in.
Right. It all makes sense. Like, you would want, if you're going into a prison or a jail, you want to know that that happened so that mm-hmm. people aren't bringing other things in mm-hmm. with them. But when you're doing it on a routine basis, it's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I walk from my car all the way to my office is about half a mile, all through buildings, in and out of buildings, through security, and it takes me about, depending on the weather, 5 to 10 minutes to get from my car all the way to my office. So if I have a meeting or something, or I'm held up at the gate because somebody in front of me is moving slowly, or there's a bunch of people that are trying to come in all at once, and only one person can go through security at a time.
Yep.
I have to keep that in mind, that I always have to build in extra travel time
mm-hmm.
Anytime I come and go mm-hmm. So that I have built in time to get through and in and out of security and then get to wherever I need to go in that facility.
Yeah, it
takes forever.
It's a lot of things that you don't even have to think about in other environments.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings my brain back, because my brain hops around. So that brings us back to the
same,
the personality mm-hmm. and behavioral or mindset things we should know. So we already talked about choosing your battles.
Detail oriented.
You got to be detail oriented, which you should be in general as a pharmacist. That's not just corrections. Like, please, if you're going to be a pharmacist.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause people's lives.
People's lives.
For real.
And your license.
Both. What was the other one that I was going to say earlier when I remembered audits? Detail oriented, pick your battles.
You said you were easygoing.
Oh, I am easygoing for the most part.
Which I'm not. And we talked about this because you do so much better than I did mentally mm-hmm. in that space.
I don't take anything personal either. I know that you are an independently licensed and practicing healthcare provider. So if you want to choose to do your way, okay, I'll just go with it.
You do not get stressed.
Nope.
Like, you do not let it stress you.
Absolutely not.
Me, I was the opposite. I was stressed.
I don't ever want to be stressed by work. I want to be able to say, I go to work, I enjoy the work that I do, and then I come home and I do whatever I need or want to do when I'm home.
Mm-hmm.
Work-life balance is very, very important.
The job does have great work-life balance. Well, speaking to this one specifically, there's other corrections across the country, but we're just giving our insight on our experience.
Mm-hmm.
But it does have nice work-life balance.
Another important thing is pay attention to what's going on around you.
That part. So, oh my gosh.
Because you are on an open campus and the incarcerated persons that are there are literally walking next to you and anything could happen, you want to pay enough attention to what's going on around you that if you need to move, you're ready to move. If you But you also don't want to really be in everyone's business. Mind your business.
You're dropping gems right now.
Just mind your business generally, but pay enough attention to what's going on around you that if anything requires you to move or get out the way, you move and get out the way.
Yes.
So as I walk through, I'm always sort of passively listening to people as I'm walking by. Mm-hmm. I may not actually acknowledge that I've heard them if they're catcalling or being inappropriate.
Because that happens.
It sure does. At any facility, men, women, non-binary people, everybody.
Listen, I will have on my scrubs and a white coat and they're still shooting the shot with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a mask on. And they can't see nothing but eyebrows. And they're still shooting the shot.
Mm-hmm. So they may do that. I don't acknowledge it.
You can't. You shouldn't.
But I will speak if they speak to me. So if somebody walks by.
Respectfully, though.
Right, respectfully. But if I'm walking by and someone says good morning or good afternoon or you have a good day or anything like that, I'll respond.
Mm-hmm.
My comfortability is I don't want to initiate those conversations because I never know who it is that I'm talking
right.
to. And I, because a lot of my patient interaction is limited to one-off occasions
mm-hmm.
or simply through digital means,
mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily know what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
And so anybody could decide that the pharmacist did the X, Y, and Z and
they didn't like it.
And they now, didn't like it. And now
they're trying to score up with you on the yard.
Right. And I don't have time for that. So, because no. I'm not at the facility to do that. I'm there to provide pharmacy services.
Right. So you have to have street smarts, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, don't come into the environment naive.
Right.
And la-di-da-di-da.
Because you have to also remember that it's an uncomfortable circumstance for everybody involved.
Everyone, yeah.
The people incarcerated there, the staff, it's uncomfortable for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't want to give an extra incentive for that uncomfortability to mm-hmm. be taken out on you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm never going to give anybody a reason to roll up on me.
I know that's right.
And if you're upset at something that I did, fine and fair. Okay. You're entitled to that. But we can speak like adults.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're going to limit it.
Right. And you can always back up your decisions with data and evidence as to why you did it. Nothing, mm-hmm. no decision you make should be emotionally driven.
Mm-mm. But you just be into the street smarts thing. Some of them will try to coerce you into doing things that you're not supposed to do. And I don't necessarily mean that in like a sexual way.
Right.
I mean they may want something, a particular medication, let's say.
And ulterior motives.
Right.
Okay.
And they want to, they everyone else has told them no, but you're the new face to them. And they want to ask you to get the thing that they're looking for because you're the new face, and they will try to coerce you into doing that. And you have to be street smart enough to know, no, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
Cause they can be really, really, really convincing.
Yes.
Telling a whole lie.
I got played in the beginning. Can I share that story? Mm-hmm. I got played. I'm new on the scene. I'm meeting a diabetes patient. His A1C was in the 15s,
oof.
Right? And he's chilling.
Mm-hmm.
He, however, doesn't feel sick. So he doesn't take any ownership or make the connection that something's wrong because mm-hmm. he feels fine. Doesn't even have neuropathy or nerve pain.
Ooh, okay.
He's young. He's in his 20s. However, this patient tells me that the reason why he doesn't go get his injections, his insulin injections, is because of the inconvenience of where it is, it is super inconvenient, right?
Mm-hmm.
These insulin injections are being done at like 4 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
4 in the morning. It doesn't matter what temperature it is, what the weather is. And they have to walk across campus. They have to get out of bed, walk across campus, stand in line, and get an injection.
Mm-hmm.
So I heard the inconvenience in it. And to me, it's like, yeah, I mean, let's find a way to make this easier for you. Mm-hmm. So I go to the provider who tried, you know, I'm gonna leave that alone. So I go to the provider, I'm telling him this story, and he's like, oh no, like he's playing with you. He's trying to move his injections to the building that he needs to be in order to do XYZ. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, excuse me? And I'm like, but his injections are at 4 a.m. and he's having to walk here. And then his job is over there. And so like, it makes sense why he's not prioritizing this, because we're making it super inconvenient for him. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, but
that's how it works.
Like, what he didn't tell you is that he used to be in that building and XYZ happened and now da 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 da. And it's like, all right, so I almost got played. So your relationships with the people inside are very helpful, mm-hmm. especially when you're starting out, because you do not know until somebody puts you on game.
Mm-hmm. Like, it almost happened to me too. I had a patient asking, so because safety is always a concern in the corrections environment, injections such as hormones and insulin are, hormones specifically, intramuscular injections are nurse administered, whereas some facilities will allow self-administration of mm-hmm. insulin, mm-hmm. but the nursing staff draws up the dose and hands the person the needle and syringe
yeah.
to self-inject. And then they hand it back and put it in the sharp container.
Yeah, the needle has to be visually seen go into the sharps container.
Right. And then there is always a corrections officer present mm-hmm. for that to occur. Just, again, for safety. Mm-hmm. So I had a patient who was looking to self-administer an intramuscular injection.
Right.
In a location, it's an injection that needs to go in a large muscle. So it's nurse-administered in the butt or the hip, the butt. And this particular person didn't want that. They wanted to self-administer their IM injection in their thigh. And they tried to convince me that they should be allowed to do that. And I respectfully said, let me look into that mm-hmm. and didn't commit to anything.
Okay, good choice.
Which was a wise choice.
Yeah.
And you should always do, if anybody just walks up on you and asks you questions and you're not necessarily 100% sure, mm-hmm. always never commit, because anything could change. And now this person is trying to hold you accountable because it's a very litigious environment.
Well, so-and-so said.
Right. No. So-and-so didn't say anything. So-and-so said, let me look into it.
Looked into it.
So I went to our nursing leadership on site and asked her about it. And she said, they've been trying to get that to happen for like a good 5 or 6 years. And you're just the new person. Ignore that. I said, oh, okay. And for safety reasons, you're not an IM needle is thicker and longer.
Yes. Meaning?
Meaning it is more dangerous. An insulin syringe, the needle is really, really fine, and it's really, really short.
You gotta really have some to like serious, you know.
Right. So it's
handwork to be able to do that.
Right. So for safety reasons, you may not self-administer a IM injection mm-hmm. in corrections. And at home, you do whatever you want to do. I don't particularly care. You could have your partner. You could have yourself do it. Fine. But you were in an incarceration facility, mm-hmm. which means that there is added security needed for all healthcare related things.
Yeah, all the needles have to be accounted for. Yep. That's what we're also looking for. Mm-hmm. I'd be acting like I'm still doing this. Why am I using present tense? Mm-hmm. You check for the needle counts yep. on the audits. Mm-hmm. It has to match the books. And if there is a missing needle, it has to be
accounted for.
Yeah, accounted for. You have to explain where it is, why it's gone.
Mm-hmm. Scissors, needles, syringes, mm-hmm. any lancets, anything.
Yeah.
You just want to be safety minded.
Right.
At all times. And you would be surprised what medications can be abused in corrections environments that you have no idea
Or the beverages that they could make.
That too. Or the, you wouldn't think that you can't give somebody a jar of Vaseline that they can turn into a weapon. You wouldn't think I can't give somebody fiber powder that can be turned into a weapon. You wouldn't think some of these other medications that in the community, no one really wants it because it makes them feel crappy.
Yeah.
So we have to keep that in mind. Same thing with inhalers. Some of them have like metal pieces in them and we can't give that to them. Because
I believe it's, I forget which ones they are, that they, the ones that puncture the capsules, I believe. So the discus ones, they have needles that you can pull it apart and they can take the needle out of the device.
Right. And then that becomes a weapon. So when we are coming up with medication recommendations, we also have to keep that in mind, that we're limited by safety.
And the packaging.
And the packaging.
Yeah.
Lotions that have the push pump in them have metal in the push, the pump. So that has to come all out of the any lotions and a squeeze cap put on the top.
Mm-hmm.
So it's those sort of things that you wouldn't even think about
right.
in the community because it's just innocuous.
Right.
But it's
things you don't have to consider.
Right.
It's a privilege in a sense that of things you don't have to consider. And then you come into this environment and you, until people tell you of how you have to think and what things can be used for, you would never assume.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, your knees are ashy. You want some Vaseline? Oh, sure.
Let me... No. and sometimes people just want things because they're trying to divert it for whatever reason. Either sell it, give it, take it themselves, and they will either have others coerce them into doing that or they just want to do it themselves. So you always have to keep everyone's safety in mind.
Yeah.
Your own and then for the safety of the person that you were taking care of.
Right.
Because everybody deserves health care. Oh, one additional fact. In corrections, people who are incarcerated are the only guaranteed health care recipients in the United States. They are guaranteed health care. And so as a result, we are providing the best care that we possibly can. Be sure that we are taking care of each and everything that each and every person needs. And ultimately continue to be respectful of each individual person because they're a person first.
Right.
They just happen to be in the circumstance of being incarcerated.
Right.
For whatever reason that may be. They may have done something wrong or been in the wrong place or wrong circumstance, whatever it may be. That's not your decision to, that's not your place rather to make a judgment about them. They deserve health care.
That just made me think of a really big thing that people have to be careful of is they have to check their bias at the door.
Mm-hmm.
Like, check it.
You can't just assume everybody's a violent, whatever person. Some people are in there for, like, petty crimes.
Or wrongfully accused.
Or that. Or they're there for a nonviolent offense, a parole violation.
Right.
I don't know.
And they can be in the same facility as somebody who has committed multiple intentional murders.
Right. And so you have to just be respectful of the fact that they're there.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever their circumstances of getting there is not for you to be cast judgment upon. I also very intentionally don't want to know what the charges are so that I don't unintentionally have a bias against somebody. I treat everybody equally. I don't know what you're here for. It's completely irrelevant to me. You're a person that's in front of me that needs care.
I never wanted to know.
I don't care.
I never wanted to know. Because once you do know, you'll immediately have a higher resistance to fighting bias.
Mm-hmm. That's why
because you're going to, if you're coming in with street smarts anyway, you're already going to have a level of alertness at baseline.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need to go making people feel weird and actually like probably perpetuating something that they, if they wanted to do it, now they,
right.
You're giving them more reason to do it because you're being weird around them. Mm-hmm. It's just so much better not to even know.
Yeah. So much easier.
And that helps with the bias part.
Mm-hmm. So there's no unintentional bias because I don't know what you're here for. Mm-hmm. I know you're here. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yep. So the bias that you're looking at in the corrections, you're looking at mostly people of color, right? Mm-hmm. You also have biases that come against sexual orientation. We have transgender patients that we're caring for. Mm-hmm.
If somebody as a patient would make you uncomfortable for how they identify, corrections is the worst place for you to be. Because that's where every marginalized group ever is in corrections. In higher percentages and higher occurrences than you would come across those same groups of people in the community. Mm-hmm. So it's very intensified. Mm-hmm. If you have a bias against any particular anything, then you are inherently going to have to work with those, with that group of people that you're biased against. Mm-hmm. And you have to check that at the door. Just, they're a patient. This is the patient today that I'm taking care of because that's who is here. They may be here for a short time. They may be here for a long time, but they are here. And so you are responsible for taking care of them.
Right.
They don't have a choice. They don't get to go and shop around and decide, ooh, I don't want to, I don't like this provider or this pharmacist or this whoever. I'm going to go over here, which you can do because you have the freedom to do that when you are not incarcerated. You're incarcerated. You have one source. One.
For pharmacy at least. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
And the medical providers, it's not one provider per se, but it's one system. They all work together.
Yeah.
So you can't sort of decide that I want a different doctor altogether and I only see that doctor. Mm-hmm. You can within the same practice, but you can't choose outside of that.
Right. Yeah, that's so true. But in addition to that, I think the biggest bias that I saw people operating out of was the bias of they're a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Like circling it back to what we said by you can't just assume. It's better to not know what they're there for because they may be there under very petty terms, wrongfully accused and so forth. But I have seen and heard people, what is the proper way to say this? I have seen them validate their reason for their behavior or make excuses for the reason of their behavior based on the fact that that person was a criminal. So That stuff I also can't get jiggy with. So these are all the things that you have to consider. But it's very novel to be a clinical pharmacist in this setting.
Yes.
So you're not so much having nurses and providers and so forth, but a pharmacist in this setting is very novel.
Mm-hmm. Especially in person.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the because clinical pharmacy services are needed and are required for anybody who's receiving medical care in a corrections environment across the country. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that person needs to be on site. And so sometimes the clinical pharmacists for corrections are remote and they take care of their patients remotely. And that's how they provide pharmacy services. This particular setup, we're on site and we see and walk amongst the patients, talk to the medical providers. They know our face. We know their faces.
Mm-hmm.
It allows a little bit more of a rapport that you can build amongst the team because they see you every day. They know, oh, I have a pharmacy question. I know I can go to this pharmacist and ask them a question, or I can peek my head in their office and ask them a question that I may have, or just call them up real quick.
Yeah.
So it allows for it's a little bit more personable, and you can build a better rapport, I have found.
So what would you say to someone who happens to see an opportunity to work in a correctional facility and that's of something for interest? As we come to our close, what would be your final words of recommendation or wisdom to depart with.
Strongly consider your why. Why are you going into this this position? Can you divorce yourself from any biases that you may have against people? Can you keep yourself and others safe? Can you sort of roll with the punches that come and go? Are you a soft person and don't receive criticism or loud or angry people well? You probably want to avoid it.
Because I've been called some things on the yard. Okay.
Same. But I sort of roll with it. Mm-hmm. And if you're considering a job in corrections, you also want to be sure that you are pretty up on your clinical skills, because any and everything can come your way.
Yes.
And you don't want to be caught off guard with, now I'm having to look up literally everything that I'm being asked always for all forever. You don't want to be that person. You want to be able to say, I have some knowledge that I can support with clinical pharmacy services, but I don't necessarily need to know everything.
Yeah.
But you should have a baseline knowledge.
Have a baseline knowledge, and you should be very confident in your ability to find information. Mm-hmm. As long as you can rely on your training and find that information, you should be good to go.
Should be.
And be honest.
If you don't know it, or you don't feel comfortable in that environment, please don't. Please don't. You will not enjoy that.
Yeah. So it's not, oh, this will be such a cool experience.
Because you will get a lot of experience very quickly, but if you're not built for it, it will eat you up.
Yes. It should be, this will be a cool experience, and I can make an impact here. Mm-hmm. And this is a unique population that I can also learn a lot from. It should be a cool experience, and don't just go in there because you think it's cool to work in that environment. Mm-hmm. So,
and not for the money either.
Ciao.
Don't do that. Student loans, they suck.
Don't close on that.
I know.
Okay. Our last piece of advice is be born into a rich family that pays for all your schooling.
Or find a glucose guardian.
Okay, we're going to end on that note. I'm really weak. Thank you, Charles.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
This has been really good. This was wonderful. It was just all the, reminiscing of the environment, the good and the bad, the good and the challenging, I should say. But thank you so much. And ladies and gents, that's the life of a pharmacist in corrections.
Yep. It's great until it's not.
Okay. We're going to...